there were no leads for Good Morning America or Charlie Rose or the Today Show or 60 Minutes, no magazines, no newspapers. There was nothing promising coming. So I dropped it after spending $13,500 on my vanity ego investment.
Hello, fellow risk takers, and welcome to my worst investment ever. Stories of loss to keep you winning. In our community, we know that to win in investing, you must take risk. But to win big, of course, you've got to reduce it. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm on a mission to help 1 million people reduce risk in their lives. All kinds of risks, not just investment risks. And I want to thank you for joining this mission today, especially our listeners in North Carolina. Fellow risk takers, this is your worst podcast host, Andrew Stotz from A Stotz Academy. And I'm here with featured guest Tony Martinetti. Tony, are you ready to join the mission?
I'm excited to join the risk reduction mission. Absolutely. Thank you for having me, Andrew.
Yeah, well, I'm excited to have you on because, you know, you're coming from a very different angle than some of our guests. And I'm interested to learn more about what you're doing, including learning a little bit about, you know, you and I were just talking about your upcoming project that is getting ready to get done. So let me introduce you to the audience. Tony is the evangelist for planned giving fundraising for small and mid-sized nonprofits. And you can connect with him right there on LinkedIn. I'll put a link in the show notes, but you can just type in his name, Tony, and his last name, Martinetti. So, Tony, take a minute and tell us about the unique value that you are bringing to this wonderful world.
Well, thank you again for having me, Andrew. This is great fun. I've never been on a worst investment podcast before. I'm usually talking to nonprofit audiences, so this is great fun. My value, I bring a different perspective to what you introduced me as my work in planned giving fundraising. I say it so deliberately because a lot of people think it's planned giving. And then, you know, your audience might think it's an investment plan or it's a condominium plan. I'm a real estate developer. No, planned giving fundraising. It's raising money for nonprofits. All my clients are nonprofit charitable organizations in the United States. And I'm introducing their donors to a method of giving to the charity that is through their will or their life insurance plan or a life insurance policy or an IRA, pension plan, charitable trusts, charitable annuities, give directly through a qualified charitable distribution from your IRA. All these long-term methods of giving to and supporting nonprofits.
And so there's two aspects that I'm thinking about as I was listening to you. You know, the first aspect is there are givers, people who have excess funds and want to share those funds with organizations that are fulfilling a mission that they believe in. And then there's those organizations that are driven by not necessarily the person who's accumulated money and is a giver, but by a person who has accumulated a passion and an excitement about a particular thing. For instance, there's an organization in Thailand, in Bangkok, called Soi Dogs, soi meaning street or like small street. And, you know, there's a huge need for taking care of these dogs that are in, you know, really terrible shape. So they need to raise funding and, you know, it's a pain in the butt. And, you know, so I just think about there's people that are on a mission and then there's people that have funding that they want to, you know, contribute. Am I framing it right? Or how do you see this, you know, the industry of the nonprofit?
No, you're right. There are nonprofits doing great, important social change work like Soi Dogs. And so that's grassroots animal welfare, right? Animal assistance. I mean, there's religion, education, healthcare, the environment, domestic violence, children, all the different medical causes, thousands of medical causes. So all this important social good work. And thankfully, the United States, people in the U.S. are very generous. We're the most philanthropic country in the world. And putting those two together is the work that I do. And my work is fundraising for the long term. Like an example, the easiest example is a gift in someone's will. When you put a charity in your will, that's not cash to the nonprofit until you've died. So it's long-term fundraising. But you're exactly right, matching generous people with important causes.
And why does someone like you exist? Because sometimes you could think, okay, well, those people that have money, they're looking around, and the people who are running these organizations, they're always looking for funding. But yet, I'm sure for many different reasons, they don't connect in the way that you help them connect. So why is it that you exist in this ecosystem?
That's a pretty big existential question. Why do I exist? Why do I exist? All right, we could take that in a lot of different levels. I'll stick with it the way you asked it. Yeah, you know, you have your own business, multiple businesses. You know, you don't just build a business and people come to it. Mm-hmm. You have to promote the business. You have to bring people to it. It's the same as a nonprofit. The way I look at it, these are businesses. They just happen to be in a tax status in the U.S., which is designated as nonprofit, so that people get charitable income tax deductions when they make gifts to these important causes. So it's a tax status, but it's a business. And you have to bring people to your nonprofit business, attract them to your cause, and encourage them not only to, you know, follow you on Instagram and connect on LinkedIn with your cause, but also they need donors and volunteers. And so that's part of the reason I exist, is to promote the idea of giving to the causes that hire me to help them.
And what is the ideal person in this situation? Let's say someone who has something that, you know, they've got a huge demand, they want to expand what they're doing, but maybe they don't either have time or skill or knowledge to reach that long-term audience. And so they just never are able to really fund the stuff that they're doing. Like, what is the perfect type of client for you?
It's a smaller, mid-sized nonprofit. And I don't put a budget number on that, or number of employees, or annual revenue, or just small and mid-sized. So, you know, we're not talking about the biggest 5 or 10% of the charities in the United States, probably more like 5%. But for the other 95% that are not doing planned giving fundraising, so they have immediate fundraising, of course, because they have to keep the lights on, they got to keep salaries paid, they got to fund the 5-year technology plan, et cetera. So they have immediate and maybe even midterm giving, but they don't have long-term giving. And that's the type of fundraising that I do. It enhances their sustainability so that they have cash flow coming in future decades. Now, we don't know when, because it's the fundraising I do, as I gave the example before, is based on when people die. But when you have a cadre of folks who have made that type of commitment, that type of long-term commitment, you know, the reality is some folks are going to die in some years and some folks are going to die in other years. And there can be a, while not predictable, there can be a fairly steady stream of fundraising revenue that comes from these long-term commitments.
I mean, it sounds like it's an area that fundraising, you know, that nonprofit just never is going to really think about, because they're just probably focused on the operating costs and, you know, talking to people to get funding. But to, you know, it's like you've got a niche that you understand what it is, what the opportunity is, how to structure it in such a way that it's super clear for that person to say, I want to put in my will, as an example, some contribution to this. And it's like, just to me, it seems like it's an area that just, you know, they're never going to really put together. So like, you can instantly come to them and go, here is a segment of funding you're probably not thinking about. You probably have not really had the time or the energy or the knowledge to access, but through me working with you, I can help you access that. And that's going to provide, you know, the long-term funding that you need to be able to really support the long-term growth that you have. So that's the way I see it. Am I right with that? What do you think?
Are you interested in a second gig as a sales business development representative?
Doing my best.
Because you framed it perfectly. I'm not even going to tweak it. No.
Yeah. So for those people that are listening that either have nonprofit or that know someone that's, you know, got a mission and they're excited about it and they're figuring out how to cover their operating costs, but they're wondering, how do I really build stability in my long-term mission? And for many people, that mission can go on for many, many decades. You know, I think this is interesting. And as we've I talked about when I introduced you, you know, you can just reach out. I'll have a link in the show notes to Tony's LinkedIn and learn more. So now it's time to share your worst investment ever. And since no one goes into their worst investment thinking it will be, tell us a bit about the circumstance leading up to it and then tell us your story.
All right. Thank you very much, Andrew. I love this. So I've been in planned giving consulting, my own business, one-person business. You're looking at the company. Since 2003, so 26 years. About 24 years ago, so 2 years in business, I thought, you know, I would like to try to be a thought leader in this niche that I'm, this is a narrow niche in planned giving, in fundraising, this narrow niche, but I'm deep in it. And I thought, well, you know, I would like to be a thought leader in this area, but I don't really want to restrict that, you know, my wisdom, all right, to just the nonprofit community. I want to go broader. Like, I want to encourage citizens of the United States who are not familiar with planned giving fundraising, might not even be supporting any charity at all in any way. They might not even be writing $5 checks or $500 checks or $5,000 checks. They're not supporting nonprofits. I want to get the word out about the importance in our culture, in our nation, of supporting nonprofit causes for the long term. So now that's a pretty big undertaking, but this is what I was thinking. So I was in the New York City area. My business was in New York City, headquartered in New York City. Now we're talking about 2003, four or five. Of course, we were all in offices, you know, 5 days a week. You know, you got to go back 26 years. So I had an office space in Lower Manhattan in New York City, Fifth Ave. If you're in or near or know New York City, I was on Fifth Ave between 22nd and 23rd Streets. Eisenberg's Diner was my favorite lunch place. If you know the Flatiron, now I'm in the Flatiron neighborhood. You can see the Flatiron building from the little office I had. And there was Eisenberg's Diner on, it's still there. No, but I think it changed names. Fifth Ave between 22nd and 23rd. So I went to what I thought would be the perfect PR agency to help lift me up, to make me a thought leader in the nation. I'm going to be the nation's thought leader on planned giving fundraising.
Thinking big.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a need. It's a huge need.
Well, I thought there was a need. Yep, yes. Yep. Well, and there is. I thought there was. So
there probably is.
I think I got a referral to, I don't remember how I got acquainted with this agency, but now we got to go uptown. We got to go into Midtown. Now we're on 6th Ave, like in the 50s, you know, 70-story, 80-story office buildings, high rent, very high rent district, not down Flatiron where my office was, where at the time, like the biggest, tallest building was probably 6 or 7 stories or something, or the Flatiron building was like 12 stories, something.
Right.
Now we're in Midtown now, 80-story skyscrapers with the overhead that you would imagine. And here I am, one-person shop, and I'm walking in. I'm interviewing them. They're interviewing me. This is a PR agency. And they bring out the big binder, like a 3-ring binder of, it's probably 4 inches thick. You know, the spine is 4 inches thick. And they flip through, and all the pages, of course, are in, it's all in page protectors. So you're flipping the plastic pages. And there they are on the Today Show. And, oh, there's a client on 60 Minutes. And there's one on Good Morning America. Oh, and there, Charlie Rose interviewed one of their clients. Oh my God, this is going to be incredible. I'm going to be on Charlie Rose. It's going to be amazing. 60 Minutes is going to do a profile of me and my practice and how important this is to the nation. So they sucked me in. You know, I bought it all, hook, line, and sinker. Oh, we'll get you on. You know, you've seen the portfolio. You know, we're going to get you on the
Oprah.
They were full of shit. Yeah. They were full of shit, as you might imagine, as my tone may suggest.
The marketing
but
agency.
I bought it, and this turned into my $13,500 vanity investment. This was an ego investment. I did it for 2 months because it was $67.50 a month. I did it for 2 months, and all I got in the 2 months was a one-time byline, like, op-ed that I had, well, of course, so I wrote it. in a giveaway newspaper. At the time, there were two giveaway newspapers in the city of New York. Down in the subways, there were two. It was called Metro New York, and there was AM New York. I got an AM New York written column, that or like an op-ed. I wrote it. It's not like they interviewed me as a thought leader. I wrote a byline op-ed, and it was given out on Martin Luther King Day, when nobody's in the subway because it's a national federal holiday. The subway, and this is where these papers were given out, and AM New York was given out in the subways. There was nobody in the subway. It was a federal holiday. So the subscription, the readership was probably, you know, 1/50th of what it would have been the next day on Tuesday. But they didn't offer me the Tuesday. So this swanky PR agency on Midtown in Manhattan, $67.50 a month, got me one placement on a giveaway newspaper on a federal holiday. And there were no leads for Good Morning America or Charlie Rose or the Today Show or 60 Minutes. There were no leads, no magazines, no newspapers. There was nothing promising coming. So I dropped it after spending $13,500 on my vanity ego investment.
Interesting. One question I have, do you think they always had it planned? Like, oh, let's put them on the, you know, subway giveaway. This will be perfect, you know? Or did they really think they were going to get you on those, but they just couldn't deliver? Or I'm just curious, what did you think was in their heads?
No, I think what they should have seen was a pie in the sky solo entrepreneur whose ideas are bigger than the mediascape reality. And they should have talked me down to what's reasonable to expect. Instead, they completely mismanaged my expectations, had me flipping through the binder, and kept feeding my ego and vanity project so that they could capture a fee.
And how would you describe the lessons you learned?
Don't take yourself so seriously. Keep your ego in check. Maybe check with some other folks in your field. Vet your ideas before you invest. I mean, that was a lot of money for me, $67.50 a month.
Definitely.
So, you know, check with friends. Check with people you trust.
Yep.
Whether they're colleagues or just, well, in my case, just citizens of the U.S. You know, does this sound like something that, you know, no. It was, like I said, pie in the sky. I mean, I would have had to educate Americans as to the value of nonprofits and then to the value of supporting nonprofits in the long term, you know, through methods like we talked about, wills and life insurance, and then, you know, go find a charity. I mean, it was just, there was too much. There was way too much for reality. So, yeah, check your ideas with somebody or some few people who you trust.
Yes, who are honest.
Yeah, who you trust. Who you trust to be honest with you. Yeah,
exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
Yeah, don't go check it with the people who are going to get a fee for capitalizing on your pie in the sky idea. That's what I did. And I got no check at all on my vanity project.
Here's a couple of things I was thinking about it. I mean, the first one, I'm kind of picturing, you know, a good old uncle who should have, you know, just walked you out the door, said this really exciting, you know, go back, rethink it, put some more time into it, and then come back when you, but, you know, of course, that's not going to happen in the business world because you're sending $6,000 out the door. And why do that? But the other thing, I think it happens for everybody when we start a business, like we just really get that entrepreneurial seizure, as Mike Gerber said in his book, E-Myth. He talked about you just get so excited about your idea, you can't talk people, you know, even if you went to your friend, your honest friend who told you this honest opinion. You know, this is where it's kind of the advice I sometimes give in this type of situation is go do it.
Yeah,
because I mean, it's so hard to break through. And if someone's listening or viewing this and they're in that entrepreneurial seizure, I mean, this is a chance to break free from it a bit. But, you know, it may be that they have to do it. So that's one of the things that I was thinking about. And then I remember there's two things that I did similar, you know, when I started my own business. And the first one is that I had just finished my PhD in China. And so I was back and forth between China and Thailand. And so, you know, I had a lot of connections I had built up. And so I thought, you know, let's do social media in China. It's big. Build out my presence and, you know, all that. And I paid a guy. And, you know, in his case, he delivered. He delivered. You know, he did a pretty good job. It wasn't cheap. And then I had another case where I was like, okay, you know, I used to go on TV shows a lot, like CNBC and all that, to talk about the markets when I worked for big investment banks. So I thought, oh, do that same thing. And so, you know, I had some other organization that got me on some of those. But then I realized there's just one thing that even if you're successful in getting on the shows and all that, PR does not equate to business, to revenue, yeah, to customers. So even if you think, well, that's not going to happen to me and my PR guys are good, sorry, PR rarely connects with revenue and expanding your business. Occasionally it does. And when it's done really focused and really right, it can. So PR won't save you in most cases, even if you got it right.
Absolutely true. Yeah, my experience as well, because later on, probably 3 years later or so, I met a freelance PR guy, and he delivered for me. I got some quotes in the New York Times. I got quotes in the Chronicle of Philanthropy, which is a respected, then it was print, you know, of course, but still, now they're digital, but respected publication in the nonprofit sector. Wall Street Journal, he also got me some Wall Street Journal quotes, placements. I had a very good relationship with the Times and the Journal reporters on the nonprofit beat. So they would call on me from time to time. Hmm. But even with that, never did I pick up the phone or get an email. I saw you in the Times. You know, let's talk about the nonprofit that I'm on the board of.
Yep.
I think they could use some help in planned giving fundraising. It doesn't equate. It's rare. Like you said, it's rare. It's more for reputation, you know, awareness, more of a long-term, this is a long-term play.
There's the remnants of what remain in my brain from my Latin class in high school is caveat emptor.
Yes.
Buyer beware, which my mom used to say. I remember, you know, she also used to say, just because it's discounted or cheap doesn't mean you have to buy it, which was really annoying, you know. Luckily, I get to say that to my mom now as she's turning 88. But the other thing I was singing in is the great saying, a fool and his money are easily parted. You know, when we are so excited about our ideas, we're foolish. You know, are we a fool? Probably not, but we can be foolish. And if we can separate that kind of foolish time where we have these big dreams from, you know, we're not fools, but we can be foolish at times. It can help us. Let's go back in time now. Let's think about that young man or woman today. They're doing this right now and they're listening and they're like, So based on what you learned from this story and what you continue to learn, what's one action that you'd recommend our listeners take to avoid suffering the same fate?
I would say, you know, check your ideas. You might get the same advice that Andrew just said, which go do it. If your mentors and your advisors or your friends think it's a great idea, I mean, informed friends.
Yeah.
If they think it's a crummy idea and, you know, you can't be talked out of it, then I would say take Andrew's advice and go do it. But check your ideas. I mean, is this an ego project? Is this really going to build the business? I mean, here I was just a couple of years in business. I'm still in the growth business development phase. PR was not the way to go about that at that stage in my business.
Yeah. That's great advice. And what is a resource, either of yours or any others, that you'd recommend for our listeners?
Well, if you are acquainted with a nonprofit, or if you are on a board of a nonprofit and small and mid-size, and you know that they are not engaged in the long-term fundraising, planned giving fundraising that I do, I'd be grateful if you'd check out my work at tonymartinetti.com. Connect with me on LinkedIn. You know, otherwise, my advice is check your ego.
Yep. That's good. I'm a member of CFA Institute, Chartered Financial Analysts, and was also president of the CFA Society here in Thailand. And I want to share this with them in our little group that we have of all of our members because, you know, they're involved. They have clients that have this need. So I think for those that are listening and thinking about it, that you're a CFA charter holder, certainly you probably have clients that are happy to figure out ways to give. So check it out. All right, last question. What is your number one goal for the next 12 months?
Publish my book in September. I'm publishing a book called Planned Giving Accelerated. It's coming out in September. So I'm excited to do that. It's my first book. I'm self-publishing. I've got a great, talk about check your ego and, you know, having somebody to rely on. I've got a great mentor who used to publish books in the nonprofit community. He retired his publishing house, but I've got a great mentor who I'm very grateful to, Steve. And that's what's got me energized for the whole year. Yeah, finishing the book, exciting. Then promoting the book. And then there's a course that will also follow on to the book.
Wonderful. Well, I hope that we can get you back when you have published it, and we can maybe go through some of the tips, the chapter summaries, or some ideas that you can get from it. And then I'd love to have you back on.
Oh, thank you. I'd be honored. Thank you very much, Andrew. Yeah, I'm going to take you up on that. Sure.
Looking forward to it. All right. Well, as we conclude, Tony, I want to thank you again for joining our mission. And on behalf of Ace Dots Academy, I hereby award you alumni status for turning your worst investment ever into your best teaching moment. Do you have any parting words for the audience?
I'll just say thank you very much, Andrew. This was great, great fun. As I said, you know, it's very different than what I've done. Thanks so much.
Yep. And that's a wrap on another great story to help us create, grow, and protect our, well, fellow risk takers. Let's celebrate that today we added one more person to our mission to help 1 million people reduce risk in their lives. This is your worst podcast host, Andrew Stott, saying, I will see you on the upside.